From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Reporters Matt Canham and Thomas Burr knew there was a lot to learn in exploring the lives of John Huntsman Jr. and Mitt Romney, about the history of these two family dynasties, their ambition, their relationship with their fathers. And one thing you notice right away is how much they have in common. But Canham and Burr chose to frame their new book around the differences, the rivalry between Romney and Huntsman, which they say has been simmering for years. Maybe it's because there's more drama and honesty in a rivalry. And to be sure, the tension between the two reveals a lot about their personal and public lives, not to mention a lot about the pursuit of power. Canham and Burr are joining us today to talk about their new book called Mormon Rivals, after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Mitt Romney and his family and supporters, not to mention the John Huntsman Jr. camp, are probably going to poo-poo the premise and the title of Matt Canham and Thomas Burr's new book. It's called Mormon Rivals, and in it they explore the Huntsman and Romney's pursuit for power through the prism of their rivalry. Neither will publicly admit to holding on to hard feelings. One Romney confidant has said that it's not that they don't like each other, it's that they don't know each other that well. But Canham and Burr say it's a stretch to see the tension between the two as a matter of quality time. It's way more complicated than that. And the fact is, a rivalry is a pretty good way of exploring the intersecting lives of these two influential men, because you have to go back and look at their histories, their families, their fathers, their faith. And along the way, you get some pretty good insights about the political culture and mechanisms of Utah and the rest of the country. So today in the program, we're talking about Canham and Burr's new book. It's called Mormon Rivals, The Romneys, the Huntsmans, and the Pursuit of Power. Matt Canham is an investigative reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune. Thomas Burr is the paper's Washington correspondent. This, I should mention, is their second book. They also wrote a book along with the Tribune's Robert Gerke on Utah Congresswoman Mia Love. And Thomas Burr, Matt Canham, welcome to you guys. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, I guess I wanted to start with this idea of the rivalry. Why is that the filter through which you wanted to tell the story of the two? Did you always figure that was the right way to do it? I mean, because there's biography in here, there's history in here, a lot of really interesting sort of cloak and dagger stuff going on. Was it always the rivalry part that you figured you wanted to...
You know, Thomas Burr here had covered very carefully the 2012 presidential race, and which highlighted that rivalry so much. You had John Huntsman Jr., who was the ambassador to China, came back to run for president against Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
And now it was a crowded Republican field, and he could say he was running to be president. But really, you don't do that unless you see Mitt Romney, who was the front runner at the time, as weak,
yeah,
as not worthy of having that position.
Which he sort of said.
Which he pretty much said.
Yeah.
At which point, it's shown such a spotlight on their rivalry. And afterward, when we were talking about trying to come up with some projects that are a little bigger than the normal Sunday feature in the Salt Lake Tribune, we said, what better way to stretch our legs than to really delve into how that rivalry began, how the connections between these families are deep, and get into the backstory?
You say early in the book you gave some anonymity to some family and friends and aides and others so they could speak freely. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, the reporting process. I'm guessing because their political lives are still in play, both of them.
Right.
So there must have been a lot of reluctance.
And to some degree, I mean, we obviously had extensive interviews with John Huntsman Jr., John Huntsman Sr., family. We had conversations with Josh Romney. But really to get down
to... You left out Mitt.
We did leave out...
Would he not talk?
We requested multiple times to talk to Mitt. He did not want to participate in the book. But really to get people to talk candidly about this situation, because like you say, publicly, they're not going to want to talk about the fact they don't like each other. But if you talk to any of the campaign aides, you talk to close family, close friends, everyone knows that's the case. And it's very apparent. If you look, for example, after the 2012 election, after the 2012, you know, kind of primary contests, John Jr. Endorses Mitt, but you never saw them at a public event, period. He was never asked to do any mailers or any, you know, phone calls or anything to really help out Mitt Romney. It's clear that the Mitt Romney people did not want Jr. involved.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that one. Mitt Romney went to New York City to get Donald Trump's endorsement in person. He didn't acknowledge that John Huntsman Jr. endorsed him.
And Huntsman's endorsement was pretty tepid.
Yes. In fact, we have a whole chapter about that.
Called that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we'll get to. But I want to jump in with the first story you actually tell, like right in the introduction. Because I think it's – I mean there are a number of slights that kind of add up over time. But this one is so telling. And you begin – this plays out in 2006. John Huntsman Jr. – and this surprised me. I guess – didn't really know Romney all that well. Probably right. Still doesn't on some level. He didn't meet him until 2004.
Yeah, they're not the same age. I mean, there's an age difference, so they didn't like hang out.
That. That is interesting. But it seemed like so Romney gives this kind of doofy speech in Tennessee, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And people are kind of rolling their eyes about it. He sings the Davy Crockett song. He's supporting with Bill Frist, I think it was.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, and Huntsman sends him this nice letter saying, hey, good job, and we're all rooting for you or something like that, or at least so it seems. But then 4 months later, Romney learns, and this seems strange. He doesn't get a call. He doesn't get a heads up. He reads in the Washington Post that John Huntsman Jr. is endorsing John McCain. Take that story from there, if you will, because this really lights it up.
Right. And I think, you know, if you think about this, at this time, 2006, it's a couple years before the 2008 election, Mitt Romney is actively building a network.
Right.
He has met with John Huntsman multiple times. He thinks he's locked that family up. John Huntsman Sr. is on his finance team.
Right.
This is a done deal. But John Huntsman keeps wanting to be involved. He doesn't want to just be a name on a list. He wants to be a part of the campaign. So he'd reach out and get nothing back. You know, and he told Romney confidants that he was frustrated, got nothing back. At which point, on the flip side, you have Senator John McCain inviting John Huntsman to go to Iraq, talking to him about foreign policy in depth, and inviting him to be a part of his inner circle. He wanted to be, you know, felt where he belonged. John McCain made him feel like he belonged. So he said yes, knowing that in the state of Utah that this was going to be bad, knowing that this was going to upset the Mitt Romney campaign. He felt slighted, so he didn't lift a finger to tell them about it.
Tell about the phone call.
Yeah, and then we get to the response. So, yeah. So Mitt Romney reads about this in the Washington Post. He makes a phone call to John Jr. And he says – only a few words. It was a terse phone call, and Junior still recalls it very much because it was really hurtful to him. Because what Mitt Romney said was, "Your grandfather would be ashamed of you."
Wait, was he yelling?
As I understand it,
does Mitt Romney ever yell?
I'm going to guess that from our conversations, it sounded more like that stern talking down to someone.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Than a screaming.
That makes sense. Sure.
Yeah. But your grandfather would be ashamed of you doesn't sound like a very mean insult. But what you have to realize is his grandfather's David B. Haight, the former LDS, the late LDS Church apostle.
Who had died just 2 years prior.
Yeah, and Junior really looked up to. That was a big role model in his life. For someone to say your grandfather would be ashamed of you is just hurtful. And it really did affect Junior, but probably in some ways galvanized his support for John McCain, saying he made the right choice.
Yeah.
But it also shows how much family and politics and religion were all intermingled in this decision. You know, Romney looked at this as a relative, as someone who's a fellow Mormon, you're supposed to be in my camp. I don't need to coddle you.
Yeah.
Why are you making this difficult for me? Where Huntsman felt like, you know, and he says in our book, it's like Mitt just expected all the nice Utah boys to wait in line.
What does it reveal, though, about Huntsman that he didn't at least give a heads up? I mean, you write this interesting story about John Huntsman Sr. when he decides to run for governor. This was in 88, I think it was.
Right.
And he at least has the respect to go to the governor's mansion and tell Bangor to his face that he's going to run against him.
Right. And respect might be the right word.
Yeah.
Because
– So that's what he lacks.
I mean, I think that he felt disrespected. And so this is a way to show the lack of respect back. You know, when you are actively trying to be involved – a part of a presidential race, when you are a former ambassador, when you are a governor of a state and you're not even getting your calls returned – you know, that's a sign of disrespect. Now, that didn't happen in the 2012 race. Mitt Romney got better at running for president. Calls got returned.
Yeah.
And a much better clip. I mean, you don't ignore someone at that level.
Can I add to that, though? There's also a degree, I would say, for Huntsman that he didn't want to just – why should he have to tell Mitt Romney who he's endorsing? He's his own person, and it's not like he has to yield, that the Huntsmans have to yield to the Romneys. And that's where we get into the rivalry idea. We have a quote in our book from a family friend of both sides that says, you know, they're trying to be the king of the Mormons, and it's hard to be second place. So Huntsman doesn't want to have to say, well, I guess I have to tell him what I'm doing.
Yeah. I'm psychoanalyzing this way too much, but I also thought about that story that in some way this was – Huntsman saying, you know, I know how it may work around here, but I'm not playing that game.
I think he's done that throughout his life.
Yeah.
Throughout all of his life. You know, he knows how it's supposed to work, and he doesn't want to play that game. Whether that's partisan politics on the federal level, he was the ambassador to China to Barack Obama, whether that was high school, where he dropped out and joined a band.
Yeah.
You know, like, his whole life is, I know what the rules are supposed to be, and I don't really feel that comfortable with it.
You go into the history of both of their families, which I think is really interesting. And in fact, what you say is to really understand Romney and Huntsman, you have to look back at the creation of Mormonism and their connection to that. There's this one figure that Gabriel Riley Huntsman, who's this really interesting character. He's great-grandfather, right? To John Huntsman Jr. You describe him as a filthy-mouthed rebel, and he's certainly unconventional. He has this saloon that he owns. He gets divorced. But this is one of the stories that John Huntsman Jr. kind of uses to point out that he wasn't a conventional Mormon. Like I wanted you to talk a little bit about that. This is he's looking to the rebels in his family line to talk about how he's different, I guess.
Yes. I mean, I think he knows that he has deep ancestors who came with the Mormons to Utah. They settled in Fillmore, which at the time was the capital of the state.
Right.
And he had some prominent family members there. And they owned a hotel, which was the big establishment in Fillmore. And he had some very colorful relatives. And I think when he looks back, you know, he doesn't want to be a staid, leave it to Beaver type person. This is a guy who likes motocross. And, right. You know, he's rich, but his favorite thing is to eat, you know, tacos from the taco cart. You know, like, he wants to be a rock and roll person. He wants to be different. And you look back, there's a couple relatives who are different. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, womanizing might be a little too strong for that time in history, but liked to play, you know, be around the ladies, liked to go dancing, liked to, you know, have these dress-up
parties.
He
was a rock star. He was in Wizard. I mean, that band was doing so well.
Yeah. So Mitt's the rock star, but he looks back to those in his history as people who were the rock stars of their time as well. And he really, you know, he likes that. He wants to be that guy.
Now, juxtapose that to the Romney story. It's Mitt's great grandfather, Miles Romney, who found Mormonism first in the Romney family.
Right.
This was in England in the 1840s, I think it was. He leaves there. He goes. Miles Romney goes with the early Mormons who are gathering in Nauvoo, Illinois, at the time, and they're called to Mexico eventually.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that because they settle there. And spent a lot of time in Mexico.
Yeah, this is not like a couple of years. This is you know, multiple generations of our family are in a polygamous commune in Mexico where it starts out as just barren land. And they build a community just like the Mormons did in Utah and throughout, you know, their migration. And it's a time where they got pretty prominent. They had a pretty strong community. They had their own economy. Things were going well. And then the Mexican Revolution happens. And George Romney, who is Mitt Romney's father, as a child remembers hearing the gunshots in the distance from Pancho Villa's rebels. and his pony gets stolen repeatedly.
Yeah. And this keeps coming back.
Yes. And somehow keeps coming back. Either they decide they don't want the pony or the pony escapes.
Right.
I like thinking the pony escaped. It just sounds funny. And this is Mitt's father.
Yeah.
And the revolution gets so bad that they have to flee. At that point, they go from being a pretty prominent member of a strong, tight-knit community.
And somewhat wealthy.
And somewhat wealthy to being impoverished.
Yeah.
They're in essentially a refugee camp in Texas. Then they move to L.A. for a while, and then they move back to Salt Lake. George Romney is helping his dad build homes in the Salt Lake Valley. And it takes his dad a lot of years to find that, you know, that his equilibrium financially, and he becomes middle class. Yeah. But George, you know, he was poor.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about that is you often associate with George Romney with Michigan, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's the governor there and he becomes prominent there. But one thing you talk about after his disastrous run for president in 68.
Right.
And maybe we should just explain this. He's on this political program. And a reporter asks him whether or not, you know, it seems like your positions, Governor, are inconsistent on Vietnam. And that's when he opens his big mouth. Thomas, you want to talk a little bit about that?
One word ended his presidential campaign, which shows you how different presidential politics are now, because that would have been a news cycle, I guess. But
yeah.
Back in 1967, this was a major deal. Essentially, he said, my position hasn't changed. It's just, you know, I went to Vietnam and I actually got, you know, talked to the generals and they explained this. And it was the biggest brainwashing of my life. Brainwashing instantly ended his campaign because people said, well, we don't want a president who could be brainwashed. We don't want somebody changing positions because they've been talked to by someone. And wow, oh, lo and behold, it all changes.
Yeah.
And you look at Mitt Romney's run for president, he was very cautious about that. He knew that one word, and actually for Mitt Romney's case, it was almost two words, 47%, that killed him in many ways. But he was very cautious looking back to his dad's experience.
Because you say in the book that Mitt Romney measures his life against his father's.
Absolutely.
And he always said that what was the thing that you quote him saying, I am a shadow of the real deal.
He idolized his father from the very beginning. And I think this is one thing that is the difference between John Huntsman Jr. and Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney wanted to be his dad.
Yeah.
He wanted to follow every step his dad went. He was his intern when his dad was governor. He wanted to be in the auto industry because his dad was in the auto industry. He wanted to get the degrees his dad got. He wanted to be his dad. John Huntsman Jr. loved his dad. Respected his dad, had a great relationship with his dad throughout his whole life.
Thought of him as his best friend
right.
on some level.
Still does, yeah.
And still does.
Yeah.
But he did not want to be him. He wanted to strike out on his own path. And that was one very significant difference between the two. John Huntsman Jr. very early went, how do I become different? How do I have my own sense of identity? And Mitt wanted to be, you know, wanted to be in line. And interestingly enough, he has kids that were just like him. Tag Romney, who lives in Boston, owns some property here and is here occasionally. He wanted to be just like his dad. He had the same apartment at BYU that his parents did when they went to college. He got the same degrees from the exact same universities. He's in the same line of business in venture capital. So Tag is to Mitt what Mitt was to George. It's that line that's pretty strong in that family, where in the Huntsman family, there is more of a sense of strike out and be who you are, be an individualist.
I sort of started that line of questioning with that tidbit that you mentioned. I can't say that I ever knew about this, that George Romney, after that, actually considered running for Senate in Utah.
Yeah,
after Wallace Bennett retired.
Right. I think, you know, and this, I think, shows the strong pull Utah has for Mormons everywhere. You know, he might be a Michigan man, but he still has a home base here in Utah. And we've seen that with Mitt Romney. He's owned land in Park City. He owns property here now. He actually lives in Utah now.
Right.
But he's a Massachusetts man. He's the governor of Massachusetts. He's, you know, been all over. He has home in California. But there's a pull to this place. There's an acceptance here that you're not going to get elsewhere if you're Mormon.
Which is why when Mitt Romney after the presidential race, what are you going to do? You have this beautiful home in La Jolla, California. It's gorgeous, right on the beach. But where is he actually making home? here in Utah, here in Holiday. This is where he's coming to.
And it's interesting that Abby Huntsman, and we'll get to the Huntsman and Romney kids a little bit later in the program too, but Abby Huntsman, this really surprised me, has said she eventually wants a political career, or certainly thinking of one, and when she runs, she'll do it in Utah.
Yeah, and I think
what, is that true, do you think?
Well, I think what it shows is, and we've seen this throughout American politics, is people who run, a lot of them know people who ran, who were part of the campaigns, who lived that political life. Both Josh and Tag Romney and Abby Huntsman saw their fathers run for office and kind of liked the experience and could see themselves in that role. And if you're Abby Huntsman and if you're John Huntsman Jr., essentially what you're saying is, I believe the political winds will shift our way at some point.
There's also part of a family mantra in some way. You know, much is given, much to give back.
Yeah.
And so that's why Huntsman Jr. has two sons in the Navy.
Right.
And he has a daughter who's a concert pianist, and he has a daughter who's on MSNBC. You know, you have this like – you're not expected to coast. You're expected to do something.
Yeah.
Publicly.
Before we head to a break, I want to mention one more element of this story, which I think is instructive. And this is the early experience of John Huntsman Sr.
Mm-hmm.
You go through this story. It's interesting. His father is kind of a jerk, a mean, drunk Blaine Huntsman. But he gets the family to California, to Northern California, enrolls in Stanford, graduates at 42. It's an interesting story. But along the way, John Huntsman Sr. meets his wife, Karen.
Right.
Who is the daughter, as you said, of David B. Haight. He was the mayor of Palo Alto, I think at the time, really prominent guy, owns this string of hardware stores, becomes an LDS apostle down the line. But Huntsman Sr. begins – Haight arranges this job for him with this egg company. Now, people may know this story, but this is an interesting part, I think, of the big story. And he moves up in the company, but he eventually leaves to start his own competing company. And this causes all kinds of turmoil, and Huntsman is accused of being disloyal and lacking honor. And I think it's an interesting part of this story about – and I'm wondering what you think it says about Huntsman Sr. and Huntsman Jr. and the effect of all of that. Would you talk a little bit about that part of the story?
Yeah, I would think this is interesting because this is also family. This egg producer is an uncle-in-law of John Huntsman who takes him under
Don.
His wing. Yeah. You know, takes him under his wing, pays for his honeymoon. It's, you know, this is family and business combined. And Huntsman always saw himself as his own boss. He always wanted to be his own boss. He looked at this experience as he was going to learn how to be a businessman, and then he was going to go be a businessman.
Yeah.
And it's not a logical leap to think you're going to be in the business that you know, which at the time was making cartons for eggs out of a new substance called styrofoam at the time. And so he competes. And he looked at it as the natural progression of an entrepreneur. His family is, you know, Dean Olson did not look at it that way. And it created conflict that just stretched for decades for him. And it became really hurt feelings.
But I think what's interesting about that story also is it kind of unravels his very short-lived attempt at becoming governor in 1988.
Right.
Because
it sure does.
You tell this really interesting story about a KUTV reporter at the time, Rick Shankman, who interviews John Huntsman Sr., and he really asks some difficult questions about this part. There's also this accusation that's come up years earlier as to whether or not he used his influence when he was in the Nixon White House for his own sort of financial and political gain. But this really undoes him.
Yeah, and I think what it comes down to is some people are more comfortable taking criticism in the public spotlight than others. John Huntsman Sr. is a very successful businessman. At this time, he was a very successful businessman. He wasn't the billionaire he is now at this time, but he was pretty close.
Yeah.
And he's used to running companies. They're not people who are, you know, maybe question his decision in business, but question the very foundation of how his business got started is a completely different level. What it showed is he pretty much didn't have – he had the desire to be in politics, but he didn't have necessarily the stomach for it. And, you know, we've talked to him for the book, and he's told me personally that, you know, in many ways he transferred his political ambitions to his son at that point.
So just to sort of explain this, so he basically comes unglued during this interview.
Yeah.
He starts attacking the reporter because the reporter's raising these questions about whether he was ethical during this time and whether he in fact did use his peddle influence in the Nixon White House. Like a day later or during that week later, he stops his campaign completely and he shifts
gears.
It
took a little bit of time because the TV station creates these five different segments over five different days. And they're individual parts of this story.
He's threatened to sue.
He's threatened to sue. He's very upset about it. This is about something that happened 15 years earlier.
Right.
So he thinks it shouldn't be this much attention should be brought on it. It should be brought about what he wants to do for the state of Utah. But this is what the TV station does. And at the end, before the last one, which was about, you know, a dispute that was mediated by people within the faith.
Yeah. Hate.
Yeah.
David B. Hate, yes.
Yeah.
And there were fines levied that he said, okay, I've had enough. I want out of it. He says that's not the reason that he dropped out of the race.
Sure.
He says that you know he knew that he could do just as much for the state through his business and philanthropy. And so he doesn't say that's the reason. People close to him say it was a big reason. And even his son said it played a part. It's hard not to see it playing a part just from the time element. And the TV station said that they got a call saying he's dropping out. They didn't run the last segment. Hmm. It never aired. And then he met secretly with the governor and say, I'm out. And he's never run for office since or never even seriously considered it.
So he transfers his ambitions to his son.
Yeah, and essentially he transfers his ambitions to his son, John Jr., who at the time was, you know, he was thinking more of a public life, more of foreign policy. You know, at the time he was living in, you know, he actually came back. He was stationed in Taiwan for the company. He came back to help his dad on the race. He lived through all of this, you know, what his dad would consider would be bad or publicity or even bad journalism. And he saw how painful it was for his father, and it didn't deter him from running.
So both have cautionary tales, Romney and Huntsman, in their experience of their fathers. Matt Canham and Thomas Burr, they're with us. Their new book is called Mormon Rivals, The Romneys, The Huntsmans, and The Pursuit of Power. They have a number of signings along the Wasatch Front this month. On Tuesday, they're doing a signing at the Barnes & Noble in Sugar House. On the 17th, there's this moderated discussion at the Leonardo in downtown Salt Lake City. You can get details about all of those and other signings on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a break and be back in a minute. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, we are talking about the relationship between John Huntsman Jr. and Mitt Romney. Salt Lake Tribune reporters Matt Canham and Thomas Burr have spent the last year and a half or so exploring that relationship. And the book they've written focuses on the rivalry between the two. The book is called Mormon Rivals, The Romneys, The Huntsmans, and The Pursuit of Power. They're joining us today. They have a number of readings throughout the valley through the next month or so. We'll give you the details a little bit later on the program. So we mentioned that first slight that comes in 2006. But really you have to back up to look at another one. This was the first slight in the Olympics.
Right. Yeah.
Set this up for us. Huntsman Sr. was a vocal opponent of the games, which I think I had forgotten. I think people will forget, but that's the underlying subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Point Huntsman Sr. was very concerned that this was going to be a big black eye for the state. It was going to leave the state in a huge amount of debt. That would be, you know, the world would look at Salt Lake City as a joke in some form because the Olympics would fail. So he was absolutely a critic about that.
And then the big scandal happens.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a bribery scandal that just tars the people who are running the games here. And essentially, they need to find a new leader. So John Huntsman Sr.
This was 1999.
John Huntsman Jr. and says, put your name out there. Yeah. And so John Huntsman Jr. volunteers to run the Olympics for free. He will take no salary. He will lead the games.
I'll do it for the good of the state everything. Yeah.
He's been an ambassador to Singapore at this time. But after that, he's pretty much worked for his father's business. The people on some of the organizing committee had another name in mind.
But wait, but before you say that, this is interesting because you write about the reaction. They think he's a rich kid.
He hasn't done anything.
Hey, didn't really do anything. I mean, he didn't finish high school even.
He didn't finish high school. took a while for him to get through college. He became one of the youngest – he became the youngest ambassador in a century, but –
But did he really earn it?
But in politics, yeah. Ambassadors often go to people who are wealthy donors. So there was a question of, did he actually earn that? How well did he do? He's worked for his dad's company. His resume, they looked at as a little weak. And essentially, they looked at this as he would be a puppet of his powerful father, who they've had a long conflict right. with. So right. why would this guy get the job? So they essentially don't talk to him.
Right.
And they go out hunt for other names. And one name that comes up is David Checketts, who's owned some sports.
He owned the Knicks at the time.
Yeah. Yep. And he's a prominent Mormon businessman. He expressed some interest. But they went out and they recruited Mitt Romney from Massachusetts.
And this, Robert Garf puts his name forward, yeah. you mentioned. And this is interesting, too, because you say at the time Romney, and this is your quote from the book, Romney felt no particular sense of pride when Utah won the bid. And he didn't care much for Tom Welch, who was yeah. involved in the process. I guess it was Ann that had to kind of talk him into it.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, this is a guy who lost a Senate race, was kind of bored at his venture capital firm, and needed something to give him a jolt professionally. And this opportunity came up, and he immediately was like, "I'm not interested. I don't know anything about the Olympics. I don't really, you know, care what happens in the Salt Lake Games." And it's his wife that says, "This is an opportunity to make a public name for yourself and try something new." And he meets with Governor Mike Leavitt at the time, and they talk, and those two immediately get along, and they now have a long friendship that spanned the rest of Mitt Romney's political career.
Still to this day, they're
still to this day.
Right.
And this is where it started. They get along so well that Governor Leavitt offers him the job.
Oh, like officially offers him the job.
Even though he doesn't have the ability to do so.
Right. Which, and he secretly accepts.
He thinks it's a done deal. He flies back and he's going to start telling his company that he needs to transition out when Leavitt's advisors inform him that the Salt Lake Organizing Committee actually makes that decision and they need to have some sort of formal process. So they essentially create sham interviews for David Checketts and John Huntsman Jr. to make the process look legitimate.
We got to go through the motions. But basically, right. this was publicly. Yeah. This was a done deal. So they go through – and this does seem a little humiliating because he does learn about this, John Huntsman Sr. and Jr. after the fact, that they – even though they had already offered the job, even though they had already taken the job, they do these interviews with John right. Huntsman Jr. and Dave Checketts.
And then they were – John Huntsman Jr.'s recollection is that he got told he didn't get the job by a fax.
Yeah. And I want to actually read that part because one of the things he says, "We were pretty much faxed a notification that, by the way, we found somebody and we are discontinuing the search," or something to that effect. And I thought that this was the height of classlessness.
Right.
They use your name. They float it in articles as if it's some sort of competitive process. And then you find you're just being used in the end. He was always pretty upset about it.
And that was a pretty recent interview. That wasn't like – that was the one from our notebook back in the day. It burned. And that strained the relationship with Governor Leavitt. You can't obviously just think that Mitt Romney did that.
Sure.
But what happened is that Mitt Romney says he's going to create these – great games. It's going to be all, you know, people from all over the best parts of business. And he starts picking his friends for key jobs and the organizing committee, people who he worked with at Bain Capital or knew him from his business world. A lot of them were Mormons. So John Huntsman Sr., still worried about the financial situation of the games, starts being a critic again. And he attacks Mitt Romney personally, says he's the best politician since Bill Clinton. And in the state of Utah, being associated with Bill Clinton is not a compliment. He came in third in the presidential race here. That's how much Utahns like Bill Clinton. So he started going after Mitt personally. And for Mitt to gain that credibility in the state, he needed to win over John Huntsman Sr. He ended up having a big meeting up at the Huntsman headquarters, which went on for hours, where they tried to strike a truce. They ended up, you know, convincing John Huntsman Sr. that continuing to badmouth the games just hurts the state of Utah. He can't stop the Olympics from coming. All he could do is give people the ability to criticize it. He needs to come on board. And he does, grudgingly.
Right.
He ends up wanting to be a part of the civic community. He gets $1 million to the Paralympics.
Not the Olympics, note that. The Paralympics.
Right. Which was a signal. One, he's supported the Special Olympics and Paralympic activities previously. So he looked at that as a continuation of his own goals. But two, he wanted to make a point that he was not supporting the Olympics. That was Mitt's thing. And he ends up getting to be a torchbearer, and it was a really powerful experience for him. He ended up really liking it. He canceled a trip to Hawaii to attend the opening ceremonies because he finally got that Olympic spirit at the last possible moment.
Let's Thomas, you did a lot of reporting on 2012.
I spent way too much time in New Hampshire.
What was the we talked about the sort of tepid endorsement eventually, but what was – how did the dynamic work between Mitt Romney's camp and John Huntsman Jr.'s camp in that primary process?
Yeah, certainly. John Huntsman Jr. saw obviously Mitt Romney was the chief opponent. You know, but this is the primary contest. It's all Republicans. It was a crowded field. There's a lot of people, but there's only one guy that John Huntsman Jr. knew he had to take out. So almost from the beginning – you start seeing, you know, kind of minor slights that he's giving Mitt Romney in to some form, and he's trying to, you know, build his own reputation in New Hampshire and let people know who he is. Mitt Romney's people, on the other hand, I think we describe a former aides like, you know, it was like a gnat. There's this Huntsman guy kind of thing. They just swatted away. It's not a big deal. They didn't care whatsoever that he was in the race. He was inconsequential. And that actually worked fairly well. And Huntsman, you know, kept the attacks. He got stronger. It escalated in anger, you know, where you would see the television commercial where Huntsman called Romney a well-lubricated weather vane, which is pretty mean about the, you know, supposed flip-flops that Romney had. And then you saw it really, you know, spill out on stage in the debates where Mitt Romney saw John Huntsman starting to climb in the polls in New Hampshire. He actually became a threat. He wasn't a gnat anymore, so they actually had to attack him. And there was actually a back-to-back debate. One night, Romney, you know, attacks Huntsman for working for Barack Obama. You know, hey, I've been helping the country. I've been helping the Republican Party, and you've been working for Obama. And the next morning, another debate where Huntsman just went after Romney and said, you know, I serve my country. That's what's important here. And then all of a sudden, Huntsman's new campaign slogan was country first, which was he stole from John McCain. But that's really when it spilled over there. Right at the end, it was just completely overt on the national stage. These two guys butting heads.
How do you describe where it eventually ended up during that race? I mean, tepid endorsement, sort of acknowledgement, not bearing the hatchet by any stretch, but acknowledging that these are the realities and we can fight another day.
Yeah, I mean, John Huntsman only mentioned Romney's name one time in his endorsement in South Carolina, one time. And it was a very weak, it was incredibly tepid, as in, and Huntsman will say he knew he had to endorse Romney or he'd be hounded for weeks after. Well, why didn't you endorse him? What's going on? So we knew he had to. He didn't really want to. And clearly, and he did offer, okay, but I want, you know, the party to win the White House. And so therefore, if you guys want me to do, you know, phone calls, I'm going to record a radio ad, whatever. There are voters who, you know, supported me. I'm happy to bring them to your side. Nothing. Radio silence from the Romney camp. They didn't care. And in fact, after that, Huntsman started getting uninvited to Republican things because he started speaking out about maybe the possibility of a third party candidate. And the Republican Party looked at him as, well, you're not really part of us anymore then.
Thomas Burr is with us along with Matt Canham. Their new book is called Mormon Rivals, The Romneys, the Huntsmans, and the Pursuit of Power. A number of readings and signings along the Wasatch Front this month. You can go to our website for the particulars. There's one on the 9th at the Barnes & Noble in Sugar House. And on the 17th, there's a moderated discussion at the Leonardo in downtown Salt Lake City. We have the particulars on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. And be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with reporters Matt Canham and Thomas Burr. We're talking about their new book, Mormon Rivals, The Romneys, the Huntsmans, and the Pursuit of Power. So I know there are circumstances that contributed to this rivalry, that it's complicated. But it seems like they don't really share the same worldview, John Huntsman Jr. and Mitt Romney, in many ways. they don't really have the same kinds of values in some way. And and you write about their perspective takes on Mormonism. Let's start with John Huntsman. Well, I think it's easy to say what Mitt Romney's take on Mormonism is.
I think most people know that. Most,
it's card carrying and it's orthodox and it's straight down the line and it always has been. John Huntsman Jr.'s brand of Mormonism, if we can put it that way, is a lot more interesting or certainly more complicated. And here's how you put it in the book. You say, Romney dove into church service. Huntsman referred to himself as a cultural Mormon. Romney downed Diet Coke. Huntsman sipped Chardonnay. Now, if you're Mormon, the concept of someone sipping white wine or any wine at all is outrageous. So let's talk about that part, because Huntsman, you say, fit into a different category of Mormons, Mormons who fall somewhere in between the not active but not out sort of.
Absolutely. And actually, this is one of the things that I think helped nudge the Mormon church more into the mainstream of Americana. And a lot more Americans got to see that, like other faiths, that there are not all Mormons are monolithic. The not all Mormons are the tie and shirt and name tag on bicycles, which most people would think of when they think of Mormons, right? So in this sense, you got to see that, okay, yes, there is the Mitt Romney. There is the orthodox, the very devout, you know, wear it on your sleeve Mormon. But there's also somebody who kind of looks like a cafeteria Catholic, a cafeteria Mormon who, you know, maybe believes in, you know, the principles of the faith but doesn't live every day to day by everything that you're told to do in the word of wisdom or things like that. And that's really where the Huntsman Huntsman Jr. and kind of his kids more fall into the idea of, you know, I still want to maybe practice. I'm a good person and I like the tenets of the faith and, you know, loving your family and being a good person to other people. But that doesn't mean that I can't go have a beer or I can't go, you know, grab a glass of Chardonnay or that you don't have to go to church every Sunday.
But did you ever did you ever say to him, And how forthcoming was John Huntsman Jr. about not his split with Mormonism, but the moment when he thinks, I don't need to wear the garments anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I believe the Book of Mormon story part. I mean, I love my family history and I love that part of it, but I don't need to go every week.
I think one thing that I would look at as part of this transition is actually their mission experiences. If you contrast their mission experiences, it's the same thing as contrasting the way they look at the religion. Mitt Romney served in France. He was involved in a harrowing car accident where someone died. It was a very traumatic experience, but it really forged that faith. It cemented it for him. John Huntsman Jr. went to Taiwan. It was very different, roach-infested apartments. It was a time where there was a lot of anti-American sentiment there. It was hard. And for him, he grew a love for the international community. It cemented that idea that he wanted to be involved in international affairs. It wasn't about the religion for him. That was kind of a side thing. And I think that's the starting point, from my understanding, of where he started to diverge from just being an active Mormon to being someone who wanted to be more worldly, who he's become going forward. He's adopted two daughters, one from China, one from India. He wants them to be raised in their culture. He wants to understand the faith of the countries they come from. Yeah. He wants to be a part of the international scene. And I think that's makes it somewhat easier not to follow every rule and tenet in the faith.
But it raises this big question now for his political future. If he figures he may have a political future in Utah, which is, what are mainstream voters, most of which are Mormon, at least the controlling part, right, of this state, what are they going to make of that now that he has sort of – I don't think people knew that he wasn't an active Mormon when he was governor. At least that didn't
actually
seem like –
he was to some extreme. I
mean,
he taught the Aaronic priesthood in a church near the Capitol to the governor's mansion when he was governor.
So now what happens – and you there's a quote you use in the book from a state senator, Todd Weiler. He says, Mormons believe that Mitt Romney is sincere about his faith and John Huntsman Jr. is a charlatan. Continuing this quote, he kind of pretended to be a card-carrying Mormon when he ran for governor, Weiler said, but that was all a ruse. So how – first of all, how true do you think that is in the sense that Huntsman Jr. did sort of play that card a little bit And how now welcome will he be in this state if he's a Unitarian Mormon?
So, you know, on the national stage, there's a lot of focus on the Mormon faith when you're a candidate. In Utah, I don't remember the last reporter who went up to a candidate and said, "How Mormon are you?"
Right.
It's not something that's really questioned this state. So people, you know, assume that, oh, okay, you list yourself as Mormon, then you're Mormon.
It's good enough.
Exactly. So no one really delved into that when he was in the governor's office or running for election. But his daughter, John Jr. doesn't really like to talk about it as much.
Right.
He really doesn't like the questions. I think he follows Mitt Romney's line of saying, you know, I'm running for whatever because I want to be that, and I don't want to be the Mormon doing that.
Right.
But his daughter, Abby Huntsman, talked to us quite a bit about that. And she's very open about the idea that her dad has never really been the wear it on his sleeve kind of guy. He doesn't go out preaching the church to people. That's a personal thing to him. And that, yeah, he does raise his daughter with a nod to the Hindu faith, and that he has a Diwali ceremony at the governor's mansion and attends those kind of things and attends various churches when he was an ambassador to China or as governor, that he didn't always just feel like he had to be one person. They describe themselves as spiritual.
Yeah. But the question was,
yeah,
how does that play in this state? Can you get elected being spiritual?
I think that's a big difference, and I think Senator Wyler's point will be something that other people bring up. I mean, one thing that I found very interesting is
or not bring up, but take it with him to
take
the voting
it in,
booth,
sure. Yeah.
Right?
Governor Huntsman won in the state of Utah by big margins twice.
Yeah.
And then in 2012, he's running for president, and in a poll here had him 50 percentage points behind Mitt Romney. You can't tell me that faith wasn't part of that,
right,
because this conversation had just been played out in the national sphere. I'm sure that plays some role. John Huntsman Jr. has told us he would be open to the possibility of running for Senate in Utah in 2018 when Senator Orrin Hatch retires. So he is thinking about that. Can that work in the state of Utah? I think that's a big question. You know, I think in this state, Republican and Mormon are tied in very fundamental ways, unlike probably any other place.
Yeah.
And how he can circumnavigate that, I'm not exactly sure.
You know, it's interesting, too, that he came out in support of Senator Mike Lee.
Right.
I think which baffled a lot of people, because John Huntsman Jr. is beloved by the Democrats in this state, or certainly moderate to liberal,
right,
people in this state. They loved him because of his so-called, what they saw as anyway, progressive views as governor. So what do you – and I think that alienated a lot of people when he came forth and supported – represented and really went against his father,
right,
who said some kind of unkind things about Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee. What do you make of that?
I think one thing I would say is that there are some big differences between Senator Mike Lee and John Huntsman Jr., particularly on issues like gay marriage, climate change. There are some similarities. I don't think they're wildly off on foreign policy. I don't think they're wildly, you know, different on tax policy or business regulation. I think there are some very fundamental parts. And I think sometimes in the media, we focus on the thing that's getting the most attention. The climate change is a hot debate.
Yeah.
Gay marriage is in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So you filter it through those things, where if you're going to make a decision on who you're supporting, you filter it through a lot of things. Now,
yeah, but was he
that
but
said,
do you see that as him that is a way of him circumnavigating?
I think that's a way to try to build back support among Republicans in the state of Utah. Mm-hmm. Now, if Mike Lee is going to be someone, you know, he was actively recruited to run against Mike Lee, and he didn't say no immediately. And then he said no, and then he ends up endorsing Mike Lee. I think it's an acknowledgement that he thinks Mike Lee's going to win, that it's a person he's known. Mike Lee used to be on his staff when he was governor, so he's known him for a very long period of time. And, you know, I think it's the sign to Utah Republicans that he's a Republican.
But there's also – we have to acknowledge here that John Huntsman is still eyeing more national office. He's a secretary of state in waiting for whoever might be the next president, a vice presidential candidate or another presidential run at some point too. So maybe Utah isn't his focus.
And he's trying to keep all options open.
One sort of intriguing thing that you've talked about Tom Spur is could a John Huntsman Jr. find a role in a Hillary Clinton administration?
Yeah, I mean, I think we asked him point blank, would you be Hillary's running mate?
Yeah.
Which I think some people like to joke about. And he didn't necessarily close the door to that, as he's not closing the door to anything really. But you know, with his foreign policy experience, say we elect Hillary Clinton as president, Secretary of State from the Republican Party would work very well.
And they know each other. This is not like there's not a relationship there. She was the Secretary of State when he was the ambassador to China. So they work together.
So let's shift finally, and we don't have a lot of time left, about a minute left, though, to sort of the offspring of these two. And I'm wondering, you know, you look at Abby Huntsman, we talked about potentially running for office at some point. She's pretty young right now to do it.
She's not even 30.
And you mentioned how Ann and Mitt Romney have both said to their sons, Josh and Tag, you know, cool your jets a while. You know, have your kids, make your money. You can do it in a little while. But I guess the question is, Abby Huntsman, Josh Romney, Tag Romney, do you see them continuing in what seems to be this cycle of these dynasties now?
I think they see themselves continuing the cycle of this dynasty, whether we do or not. I think they expect, and their fathers and their, you know, John Huntsman Sr. expects that there will be a continuation of the public life of these families, not just professional success, but public success. And when that happens and how it happens, I'm sure is very complicated. There's a lot of things that go into when you run for office, how you run for office. But even in the state of Utah, we've seen Josh Romney play an active role in the conversation over the homeless services. He was very active in endorsing Mia Love in the last race for Congress. He wants to be a figure, and people are constantly asking him whether he's going to run for office. I think Abby's probably a little farther off. She's a little younger. She, you know, Josh has six kids. They're young. Abby's married, living in New York. Maybe she wants to start a family soon. I think she's a little bit farther down the road, but Joshua and Tag are going to be a little closer.
Final thought.
This is a good question. They don't really know each other either. The kids are not. No, there's no family reunion. So Abby and Josh don't really know each other either. So the question will be, will they still have this kind of rivalry going forward too? Because like John Jr. and Mitt, they don't know each other.
It's Thomas Burr. He and Matt Canham, authors of the book Mormon Rivals, The Romneys, the Huntsmans, and the Pursuit of Power. I mentioned a number of readings and signings along the Wasatch Front. One on the 9th at the Barnes & Noble in Sugar House. And on the 17th, there's a moderated discussion at the Leonardo in downtown Salt Lake City. We have the particulars on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Matt, Thomas, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.